Third Coast Digest is brought to you in part by 91.7 FM, WMSE Frontier Radio.
Gretchen Mead, welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Good. Thanks for coming. Now, you are the founder of Victory Gardens Initiative.
Mm-hmm.
Now, my first awareness of the phrase Victory Gardens has to do with World War I and World War II. Not that I'm that old, but reading it, okay.
Thanks for clarifying that.
She laughed. So, oh, yeah, sure you're not. but just from historical references of people growing food when all the other energy and for growing food was going to the war effort.
Right.
So my question about Victory Gardens Initiative is, does the name come because you think we're in that kind of a crisis
mm-hmm.
mode?
I do. I think that it's a new twist on an old idea that growing your own food can create a more resilient community and can be a way to be an active community member or even an activist to change what is wrong with the world or how people perceive what's wrong with the world. During World War II, it was a little easier, I think, for people to understand what they were fighting against.
Sure. You know,
it was very clear. They could point to Hitler and they could say, he's evil and we clearly need to do something about that. And if I can send resources to that war effort, I'm going to do it.
Right. Yeah, it's much easier when there's a bad guy out there.
Yeah. And now the bad guy in some convoluted way is sort of us. And so it's a little harder to, you know, wrap your brain around and to wrap your energy around because we're fighting sort of amongst ourselves about it,
well,
you know?
We are. I mean, my perception of it comes a lot from, there's a fellow named Bill McKibben, who I don't know if you know, but he wrote a book called The End of Nature and Earth. And
I had a chance to shake his hand, actually.
You did, really?
I did. I get to tell him that we were planting fruit and nut trees to prevent climate change. He was very proud.
Oh, good. Mm-hmm. Oh, good. I'll bet. Because he has a whole section in the middle of, I think it's in The End of Nature, and also reiterates it in Earth about the sustainable food efforts and permaculture in the state of Vermont, where he lives now. But to going back to who the enemy is, not that there is an enemy, but it is. We've lived a certain way in a very sort of aggressive way with the earth for centuries. And we're coming to the realization, it seems, that it's not hospitable to us anymore. So we have to change our ways somehow. We have to change our way of thinking, which is so hard to do.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Now, was there an event or a book or a person or anything that inspired you?
Well, I think that people are inspired in many different ways at many different moments.
Right.
And then often there's an epiphanal moment for some people, but change is also a slow awareness and a slow development of your consciousness. And I think for me, I was raised in the country, not on a farm, but we grew a lot of our own food. My dad hunted, my mom canned and preserved. And we just did this as a way of life to save money and because it was just what people did where we lived, a lot of people, not everybody. My mom grew up on a farm, and so she was very knowledgeable about these things. But also I had my own sort of moment with the food system itself when I realized it was affecting me in a severe way. I was starting to feel very unhealthy when I moved away from my family and the food that we traditionally ate.
Right.
So that was a personal moment for me of, wow, I have to do something different. And then
your body wasn't digesting.
Right? Just wasn't working. My energy levels were very low.
Right.
You know, well, it's funny when you go to tell your doctor that your energy levels are low, they don't know why. They have no idea. It's very often because of the food system, and they very often would like you to just go get therapy.
or
take a pill. Oh, gosh, they even like that better, actually.
Oh, yeah, lately, that's what the pharmaceuticals, they're the answer.
Which is actually the third maybe piece of my story. I'm a clinical social worker by training, and I moved to Milwaukee to become a clinical social worker. And so I would see the same pattern of behavior with the people I was working with. There's very little knowledge in the medical community about the social justice implications of the food system or the mental health implications of the food system. And so I would be working with people, and there was one particular incident where I said to a psychiatrist, you know, actually he said to me, please don't recommend that the clients here look into what they're eating as a way to treat themselves because they might stop taking their medications. To which point I said, well, that's my goal.
That's
I want
point,
them to stop taking their medications so they feel better. But his goal was to keep them on medications. And mm-hmm. so there's clearly a place where we just didn't agree on yeah. what needed to, you know, work for people or what I thought was going to work for people right. and what he thought. So in that, there was definitely a defining moment where I had to change the way that I was doing social work. I mean, I still really feel like I'm doing social work. It's just more from a systems perspective, and it's more targeted about changing the system rather than trying to out an individual as the individual needs to change their behavior or change something that they do in order to make themselves better.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So how is Victory Gardens Initiative changing the system? Mm-hmm. I mean, what do you offer?
Mm-hmm. We basically try to help people grow their own food. And we do that, I think, in a way that's unique in a couple ways. One is that we make it very exciting and very fun for right. people and have a consistent message of unity and community and bringing people together for the purpose of growing food.
So it becomes a community activity and mm-hmm. not just... Mm-hmm. You can, although from what I read, you can put a garden on your rooftop or
right.
or mm-hmm. in a window. I lived in Manhattan most of my adult life, and people would grow some tomatoes and some squash in a window box.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
And can you grow food inside mm-hmm. even?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we do a little bit of that. But I also want to make the sort of distinction between just agriculture mm-hmm. and what I want to call the intermingling of human and food ecology, which we have lost, which has taken us away from a way of thinking that we could respond to the natural environment or work with the natural environment rather than working against it.
Okay. Could you spread that out, articulate?
Sure.
Yeah. Okay,
yeah.
Good.
So when we're promoting growing food, when Victory Garden Initiative promotes growing food, we want to make sure the entire system is looked at. So where is the food source for the plants themselves coming from? Well, it comes from waste. It comes from organic matter. There's a cycle of life that we are part of. Our food system is part of it, and we are part of it. We are not above it to control it.
Right.
There's a system in place that has been around since, you know, the creation of time that we need to look at and consider, and we need to make that part of our thinking, part of who we are as a culture and as individuals
right.
in order to move forward sustainably. And we've just moved away from that. There was a time when there was a deliberate removal of agriculture from urban environments. All mm-hmm. the policies were changed. You couldn't grow food. You couldn't have chickens, none of that.
Right.
And that schism wasn't just an act of, you know, these people grow food and these people do not, the people that are rural and the people that are urban. It was also a schism in the way that we thought and related to the world and the ecosystem that we are part of.
Right.
So we want to reunite that as a way to shift a paradigm or a consciousness. Does that mm-hmm. make sense?
Yeah. No, it makes sense. Mm-hmm. It makes sense. I've trembled a little bit about. Well, okay, I don't really tremble, but I fear for it because it's a notion. It's a notion that's dear to me, and I really mm-hmm. like the idea, and I really do understand and believe it. But it's a notion that's very hard to get people to understand,
mm-hmm.
to give it credence
mm-hmm.
as a necessity,
mm-hmm.
as something more. There's a tendency to sort of say, oh, yeah, peace, love, granola,
mm-hmm.
or peace, love, vitamin E, we used to say, or people used to say when teasing us for thinking that there was something more to life
right.
than getting a bigger car. Mm-hmm. It's a hard sell.
Right. And that is, I think there's a difference between the fundamental truth of why we're doing what we're doing, and then actually how we do it. How do we engage people?
Right.
So some people, you know, maybe the artists and poets of the world, they're gonna come into this movement because of the fundamental truth that they believe in.
Right.
There's other people that are just hungry, and there's other people that know that they need to eat different food because they don't feel good.
Right.
And that's what I love about this work. We can use so many, there are so many reasons to join in this movement.
Right.
Well,
that's mm-hmm. what I was getting at. One of the pragmatic parts mm-hmm. of it, because I mean, it's a great feeling to grow your own food and to eat your own food.
Right.
And it tastes better mm-hmm. usually. You know, the difference between a tomato grown in your backyard and a tomato that was picked 4, 5, 6 days early so that it could travel 1,500 miles or however far it came so it could sit on the shelf in a grocery store and you could buy it, the difference in taste is remarkable.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've drunk a $3,000 of wine, and I've drunk 89-cent Thunderbird. And the difference is remarkable. And there's a reason. But that tomato that costs less to create is the better one,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. and you can teach people, show people how to grow mm-hmm. good food. Now, so what can I put in my garden?
In Wisconsin?
Yeah.
Oh, we can do all kinds of things. What do you want to put in your... That's actually the better question.
Okay.
What would you like to eat? Let's figure out if we can grow it here in
Milwaukee. Tomatoes,
absolutely,
I really
tomatoes.
Like. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Good potatoes.
Potatoes. They take up a little more space.
Yeah.
So we like to figure out how we're going to get the most in a small amount of space.
Okay.
So we try to make things climb. So if you wanted to grow beans, for example, the climbers would be a better option
right.
in an
okay.
urban environment because you wouldn't have to take up horizontal space. You could take up vertical space.
Now, you could grow green beans. Can mm-hmm. you also grow black beans or
mm-hmm.
red
you can.
Beans? Kidney
yep.
beans? Yeah.
Yep, absolutely. I did that last year, actually, for the first time. I tried to store my own beans, but it takes a lot of space to grow that many storing beans because you can eat a lot of beans.
Well, I suppose it does take mm-hmm. a lot of space, but that's mm-hmm. all right. Now, there are, just to jump back again a little bit, in terms of spaces and public mm-hmm. spaces, you can grow in your own yard if you have a
absolutely.
Yard.
And that's one of the real things that we focus on. We really want every home to have that cycle of life happening right there. So we create waste and we might as well turn it back into food. You can turn organic waste into food within a matter of months, literally eating your waste.
And what you are calling organic waste, you mean
compostable.
Banana peels,
yep,
coffee
banana
grounds.
Peels, leaves, coffee, yeah, all of
coffee
that.
Coffee grounds,
stuff.
Everything.
That's right. All very valuable material.
Right.
And it can be turned right back into food again. I also want to emphasize the value of growing perennial food crops. And perennial means crops that come back every year by themselves. This is fruit and nut trees, this is raspberries,
right.
you know,
okay.
strawberries, these things that keep coming back. They require very little energy input, very little work up front, and they offer a lot of food, and they do it vertically, so you can get more food out of a space if you're using perennial food crops. And that's a big part of that ecological system that I was talking about before, about reconnecting. One of the trends that historically, if you look over time, of cultures that have collapsed, those cultures are the ones that have boomed and then collapsed. They're based on annual food crops. So they're based on corn, they're based on soybeans, they're based on things that we have to grow that deplete the soil if we don't do it in the right way.
Right.
And so eventually you run out. You run out of the energy and the nutrients and everything that you need to grow those foods. But when you're dealing with perennial food crops, fruit, nut trees, berries, like I was saying, those things don't behave the same way ecologically. They actually replenish themselves.
They replenish and they replenish
and they don't
the
take
soil,
the work
right?
and they don't, you know, they don't take... They don't take slave labor and they don't take oil. Two things that we want to avoid.
That we want to try to avoid. We got to
right.
cut down on that stuff.
Right,
that's right.
Right.
And you can still have a regular job. You don't have to spend your whole mm-hmm. time in the garden mm-hmm. killing them and killing insects and stuff
right.
like that.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Now, in the city of Milwaukee, I spent a lot of time in the course of my life, not World War II, in Toronto. And they used to have, I remember early on in Toronto, there would be all along where they're elevated train is, or there's subway. There's public land, or not public land, but land on either side of the tracks to be safe. But people, the city of Toronto had allowed people to grow gardens there. Are there public lands in the city of Milwaukee where we're allowed and even encouraged to mm-hmm. grow our own food as a community?
Mm-hmm. The city of Milwaukee is very supportive of urban agriculture.
Right.
And they're more supportive all the time. They're really doing what they can, mostly to kind of get out of the way because there's such an interest in doing this.
Right.
And
is it a movement? It feels like a movement to me.
It's absolutely a movement, and it's really growing, and there's a lot of power in the movement.
Right.
The city of Milwaukee is really at the forefront of that, and there are people really all over the city that are asking to use city land, and the city of Milwaukee is agreeing to that. There's a number of ways that you can get the ball rolling to use city land. They're also working on an urban agriculture policy. I'm part of that committee, as well as a number of other nonprofit organizations that are concerned about food in the city. We're changing land use policy. We're changing water use policy. And we're looking we did pass a honey ordinance, so you can now have bees in the city of Milwaukee.
Oh, great.
And I believe that a chicken ordinance is going to be passed soon.
Right, they just did a chicken thing in River Hills, I understand.
Yeah, but I know. They don't, and we need inner city chickens, where, so people can right. save a little money.
Exactly.
But I'm really, very happy for them.
I'm happy for River.
Apparently, not very
in
targeted.
River Hills, they started this sort of campaign. We want to grow our own chickens, and then they looked at the laws, and there were no laws against it.
Yeah.
So they just went ahead and did it.
Right.
But in Milwaukee, as mm-hmm. you said, there was this point in time where they said, the farmers go somewhere else. And mm-hmm. We dress
right.
up here.
Right. I'm hopeful that it's going to pass soon. I believe right. that there's a lot of support for it. And so talk to your alderman. If you get a chance, talk to your alderman or woman and make sure that they support any chicken ordinances that are coming down the pipeline.
Right. And the bee ordinance has already passed.
Bee ordinance has passed.
That's great. Yeah. That's great.
Yeah, we can thank Nick Kovac and Yves LaPierre at the city for doing those things for us.
Okay, mm-hmm. cool. Now, let's go back and just pick up some of the why it's a good idea for people to either grow their own food or share. Farmers markets are usually locally grown food, aren't they, most farmers markets?
Mm-hmm.
And why it's a good idea for people to, besides my rhapsodizing about how much better a homegrown tomato tastes, mm-hmm. what are some of the other reasons? Why is it better for your body? I mean, a lot of people probably know this, and it sounds like a dumb question, but just...
Right. Well, I think fundamentally we were evolved to eat those foods. So we're sort of under siege from the food system, which has radically changed due to the corporatization and industrialization of it faster than we have evolved. And so we're seeing all sorts of health-related illnesses due to the food system that's highly processed and highly industrialized.
Right.
So when you go back to eating those foods that are not processed, not, you know, the things that they sell at a farmer's market that come right from the earth,
right.
that's just going along with what our bodies are asking for from an evolutionary perspective. It's kind of as simple as that.
Okay.
You know, there's
right.
nothing inherently evil about a different nutrient in a food, except for the way that it affects our bodies and then affects our culture and our communities,
right.
you know?
So when you process a food, when you pick it early, as I said earlier on, so that it can travel great distances and be on the shelf for a longer period of time. And I used to hear the story that they were talking about tomatoes, that they were hybridizing a tomato that was rectangular mm-hmm. instead of round
mm-hmm.
so that it could be packaged mm-hmm. and picked more easily.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I think that that's another, you're coming to another point about why eat the farmer's market food. Things that are more industrialized tend to be more genetically modified.
Mm-hmm.
And countries around the world are rejecting GMOs and genetically modified organisms
right.
because no one has studied the health implications of them. And when they have studied the health implications preliminarily, it's not looking good. I mean, they're right. damaging internal organs. There's all sorts of terrible health implications of GMOs. But the corporate industrial system here is really powerful. Their lobby is powerful. Their political control is powerful. And we have not rejected them here. So when right. you're buying those genetically modified rectangular tomatoes, you really don't know what you're getting. You don't know how it's going to affect your children's behavior. You don't know how it's going to affect your own longevity. But
or,
there are,
as you say, how it's going to affect your immune system, your
mm-hmm.
health.
Your mental health.
And not just your children's
right.
behavior, but your great-grandchildren, mm-hmm. who you may never meet, but mm-hmm. just because of what you're passing along genetically.
Right. I think we'll find a lot of things are very related to the food that we're eating. We don't know it yet. You know,
right.
it's just going to keep, I mean, things like, you know, things that are syndromes, like chronic fatigue syndrome, where no one can quite figure out why somebody doesn't
right.
have the ability to get out of bed or is experiencing pain. These things are going to come to light in the next couple of decades, and we're going to understand that they're probably related
right.
to our food system or some other industrial complex.
Yeah, because the United States as a culture sort of loves the notion of progress, of
mm-hmm.
moving fast, and
mm-hmm.
you can make all these things, and we just have ingenuity all the time. And for the last 150 years or so,
mm-hmm.
it's a lot of that ingenuity has gone into places like Monsanto and
mm-hmm.
DuPont and how to kill the insects so the plants grow faster, how to modify our food sources.
You know what I would like to see happen, actually?
No, I don't.
I would like to see the health insurance industry take on the food system. You know, I would like to see those two giants battle it out to put the blame on where it belongs. And I want to see what the result of that is and see if it can save us all some time and money. If they would just fight it out and, you know, kind of like the tobacco industry was, you know, taken to task and said, yes, you really are destroying our health and you're really causing all of these problems. You know, their power was taken away. I want to see health insurance companies do that to the food
right.
industry.
Right. I wonder. That would be interesting if insurance companies
I'm going to get
would...
in trouble for saying that on the radio.
No. That's right. Well, also, the insurance companies don't want people to be healthy.
Right.
Yeah, if everybody was healthy and everybody ate well, they wouldn't need to so many mm-hmm. doctors and then...
That's right.
That's right. Right.
Poor Lipitor.
Yeah, I feel so bad for them. Let me see. Oh, yeah. Well, this is a question that we've kind of answered, but I have the feeling that we're so entrenched in our ways of thinking about food and especially over talking just what's happened historically in the last 150 years, where now kids grow up thinking food doesn't have a face. And this has happened rather rapidly. 150 years, mm-hmm. given geological time, it's pretty fast. Only it's about three generations. They say it takes an animal just two generations to begin to evolve a new trait if something has changed. So I'm not worried about the polar bears because they'll figure it out
mm-hmm.
as long as we don't get it too much more in their way. But I fear that it will take several generations to change this entrenched thinking that mm-hmm. we have. You'll concur?
I do. I think it's going to take several generations. Well, I don't know if I totally concur. I think that I'm concerned, right? I'm concerned that we are headed for some type of crisis based on our behavior. I don't know what that's going to look like. Some people think that we're going to run out of water. Some people think that, you know, climate change is going to destroy our agricultural system. Some people think overpopulation, you know, some people think a pandemic. I think that there are a multitude of issues, and I want to be very clear that we are in a crisis right now and we don't just quite haven't identified what it is.
Right.
However, I want to also emphasize that there's hope and that we need to act and that there's time to act. It doesn't mean we can go back and undo the crisis that we're in. It means we need to plan to respond to this crisis and we need to do it now.
Right.
And we need to become aware and we need to resist apathy. We really need to resist apathy.
Right. That's the hardest thing because mm-hmm. there is a complacency and apathy that we live in and a sense of hopelessness mm-hmm. where I can't do anything about it.
Right.
And that we just let it go. Mm-hmm. But we can do something.
We know what the answers are.
Right. It's dangerous to sort of to be fear mongers and mm-hmm. say, oh, if you don't do this and don't do this, it's all going to fall apart.
Mm-hmm.
But those pragmatic ways that Victory Gardens Initiative is helping people. And you can go to your website, right?
You can. Uh-huh. VictoryGardenInitiative.org.
Right.
And there's all kinds of information.
I can get somebody to come out to my house and put in a garden for me, right?
If you're willing to help support us in many ways,
yeah.
Yes. Actually, it's not true that you have to do anything to support us even. We have a wonderful event coming up on May 28th, the Great Milwaukee Victory Garden Blitz. It's our third annual Blitz.
Great.
And we sell gardens to people who can afford them. And they're $125 for a 4-foot by 8-foot raised bed. So you can get started. It's a perfect way to get started.
Right.
But we use that as a fundraiser to help other people who may not have the resources to install a garden to get started. So it's a beautiful way to both get yourself a garden started and then to contribute to other people who are less fortunate to start their garden.
So you could buy a garden for somebody else if you wanted to.
Absolutely. You could donate $125 and to get the entire bed installed, or you could just donate one little piece of that.
Now, do you get the raised bed? Do you
mm-hmm.
get the
soil
seeds?
In it? Nope, not seeds. We decided that we wanted people to have the fun of picking it out because
right.
it's fun to look through the whole catalog and figure out what you want to grow or to
right.
go to the store.
Oh, that's cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But we also, and if this isn't a way that you're able to get involved, we also are looking for volunteers to show up the day of the event. Again, it's May 28th. The kickoff is 9 a.m. at the Urban Ecology Center.
Great.
In
Perfect.
Riverside Park. And volunteers install gardens all day long. And then in the evening, we have a wonderful potluck and party
to celebrate.
Mm-hmm.
Eating your own food.
Eating, yeah, exactly.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Will there be, what will be up by May 28th?
May 20th, it's all early stuff.
Oh,
so
yeah.
It'll be, if it's homegrown, it'll be lettuce, spinach, kale.
Okay.
Onions, garlic, asparagus, maybe
right.
it will still be by then. It might be done by then, depending on the season.
Right.
And then it'll be all those canned goods that you preserved last year that right. you can still have access to.
Because that's the other wonderful thing about having your own garden is you really get in touch with not just summer, winter, spring, fall, but
mm-hmm.
the micro seasons
Absolutely.
That there are.
Absolutely.
And because it's
mm-hmm.
cool.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Thank you for coming in.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Going to get a garden. Thank you.
All right.